Hi, and welcome to the Rachel Sellers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing free education about all things mental health. This podcast is all about ending the mental health stigma and helping people cultivate a deeper awareness and understanding of themselves. It felt like time to switch things up. So for the next several episodes, you will be hearing from some amazing thought leaders and teachers in the mental health field, and more specifically within the eating disorder and anti-diet community. I'm your host, Rachel, and I'm pretty pumped that you're here. Welcome back to the podcast. I am thrilled because I did a thing, listeners. And I stepped out of my comfort zone, and I have a wonderful guest on the show for today that I am so excited to introduce you all to. And I have the wonderful, amazing Stephanie Michelle on today. I have a girl crush on her. Aww. I haven't told her that. So this is the first time
so honored
that I've said that. Yeah, but I do. And I know Stephanie virtually. We met on Instagram, and she is just an expert on all things binge eating disorder. And I am so excited for her to be able to teach you just all the things today. So Stephanie, I thought we could just chat by, if you just want to tell our listeners like a little bit about you and what you do.
Yeah, I am. Hi, and thank you for having me on. I've been following you for a long time too, and I love everything that you post and do.
Thank you.
So yeah, I'm Stephanie, and I am a binge eating recovery and diet culture recovery coach, which is like a title I just made up. But I'm actually a health coach. I'm a certified health coach, which is where some of this started. And I have had multiple eating disorders throughout my life, and pretty much all of them, including orthorexia, which was my obsession with clean eating. And that's when I became a health coach. And as I was kind of building a career in health coaching and teaching people how to be their healthiest, best selves. But meanwhile, like binging all throughout in the background, I realized that my life really hadn't changed, and I hadn't really gotten rid of any of my eating disorders. And that I still had it. It had just manifested differently. And I decided to take a step back and get myself in recovery, which of course I tried that before. It wasn't like that was like a new idea for me, but it was just a different approach that I took. And I can tell you about how that all happened, but I took a year and I healed from binge eating. And I like through that process, I remember I would just wake up and say, if I can ever help anyone like get out of this feeling that I've been feeling for 20 plus years. You know, if I can ever help anyone get out of that, that's what I want to do. So I started on social media, and I have been coaching ever since. And I ended up leaving my full-time job to do this. And it's my absolute, absolute passion. And I work with people who just feel like they can't get out of that binge restrict cycle, or just the binge cycle itself. And also the accompanying issues of body image and pretty much all of the things that go along with having an eating disorder or disordered eating. Yeah, in a nutshell.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing a little bit about your personal journey. I think it is such a gift that you offer, that you have been there and you get it and you know it. And there's so many of us, myself included, who are, you know, work in this field, whether it's through coaching or therapy, who are recovered from their own eating disorders. And I think that there's this cheesy quote, I think, that says something about like our deepest pains become our biggest passions. And I hear that in what you just shared. And I see that in myself too. And I think it's something remarkable that you get to offer people, because you don't just know it, like you know it.
Yeah, I always say like the boots on the ground experience of this is probably like the most valuable asset, you know, like more than the training and like the things you learn and like the things you can, you know, spit out in terms of the education. There's just something about having been there and knowing the ins and outs of what the thoughts are and what the feelings are and the desperation and all that, and being able to relate, I think is, and anyway, for me, I mean, I think it means a lot to have somebody be able to say, yeah, I totally get that. I've absolutely 100% been in those shoes, and I'm not anymore. Not that everyone's journey is the same, and not that, you know, recovery looks, you know, just because I recover doesn't mean someone else can recover. We're all dealing with different resources, and we all have different supports and privileges, but there is something really comforting and space holding about having someone who's been through it.
Absolutely. So I would love if you would share, tell us what binge eating disorder is, what is a binge, and what tends to trigger a binge?
Yeah. So a binge is distinct from like overeating or even necessarily emotional eating. It is this, and if you usually, and I'm not going to say all the time, because I've actually met, I've had some clients who've come to me and said, like, I just realized that I binge eat because I heard you describe something. But usually, I mean, if you binge, you kind of know that you're binging because it is this really like out of body almost experience of consuming far more food than you could, than you would consume in any other situation, not just like Thanksgiving meal, but like rapid, urgent, frenzied, compulsive sort of like rapid fire ingestion of food in a, like in a discrete period of time, which is part of the definition of it, but it's usually very quick. Although it can also extend like an entire day where you just cannot stop eating in a very compulsive way. Where you're eating to the point of discomfort, you're eating well beyond what your body and even your mind really want to be doing, but you just can't find a way to stop. It feels extremely urgent and like you better not get in my way because I'm going to be really pissed off if you do. There's a lot of guilt and shame that comes afterwards, and it's usually feels something like you just can't control. So it's not like just having the extra piece of cake, right? Or having a second portion of dinner because it's just that delicious and then feeling really, really full. It's like, it doesn't really matter what it is. It just needs to be consumed. And that's the mission. And you sort of like almost check out, even if you like are watching yourself move through it, you're just like, oh, I guess we're just, it's like you're on a ride and you just can't get off.
And you spoke to in what you just shared, like, I think one of the common myths about binge eating and that people tend to assume that it's the same as overeating and that it is just like eating an extra piece or two of something. And I'm grateful that you made that distinction between the two because they are very different.
Yeah. And it's also different from like an emotional eating experience too. I really classify them differently because so binge eating is rooted in restriction. And this is a concept that I certainly didn't really understand. And also I think it's common, this is another myth around binge eating, that it's something about your willpower and that the point of, you know, binge eating recovery or the way to address binge eating recovery is to learn how to eat less. Because it's just that you can't control yourself around food because you eat too much of it. Binge eating, I have three like pillars of restriction as far as what can fuel a binge. And that's like physical restriction, mental restriction, or emotional restriction. Where physical restriction is the like active process of not eating certain foods and or fasting or withholding food groups or just actually not consuming certain foods due to beliefs you have around those foods. But it can also be, and this is something that I really want to actually talk about when you asked about myths. So I, at one point in my life, was binge eating every single day, but I was still restricting. And there's this idea that if you are eating food at all, or especially if you're binging at all, that you're not restricting. When the reality is that if there are any periods of time where you are actively trying not to eat food or like kind of white knuckling your way through the day because you binged yesterday and you're really trying hard not to binge today. So you're going to fast today or you're going to eat as little as possible today because you have to make up for yesterday or you're going to eliminate a food group because, you know, we're not going to have carbs because we had too many yesterday, even though you had the binge and your overall amount of food is still calorically significant, it doesn't mean that you're not restricting. there's still all this period of time in between where you may be restricting, whether that's physically withholding food from yourself in between binges or mentally restricting the food. So having the thought of, I ate so much yesterday that today I have to be good. I ate so much yesterday that I'm going to just eat a certain things today, or I'm going to just keep binging the rest of the day because today's already blown. And so I'm going to just start Monday. Or even just, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm disgusting. This is so ridiculous. This is like just the judgment and all of that mental restriction is that food judgment and self-judgment about eating food. And that those forms of restriction fuel your next binge every time. And that it doesn't have to just be about, you know, a lot of times I think restriction is looked at like, oh, well, that's for people who are like borderline anorexic or have live in really small bodies or who are under eaten, who don't have a lot of calories. That's not me, because I really actually consume so much food. I need to learn how to eat less. But restriction is so much broader than that. And if I had learned this, if I had understood this years ago, well, I don't know if I would have changed anything, but this was a key piece of my own recovery of understanding that that was what was happening and that it wasn't about my willpower, but about my restriction.
Mm-hmm. I love the three categories that you use to break that down with the physical, mental, and emotional. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about that emotional restriction piece? Because I think that's something that's pretty misunderstood.
Yeah. So emotional restriction is just, as I define it, I mean, this is a term I sort of made up, when we use food chronically to suppress, numb, distract, communicate, or express our emotions in some way. And these emotions can be positive or negative, but when we use food as almost like the substitute for the emotions and put the restrict the actual presence of the emotion itself, and we replace it with food. It's similar. I mean, there is a spectrum, I think, of emotional eating that can turn into emotional binging. And I have seen that. And usually this is happening hand in hand with a physical or mental restriction also, but I have also seen it distinctly existing as emotional restriction. And the farther, one of my clients actually describes this as a coffee press, or a French press, you know, like where like it pushes down and it compacts the coffee, like really, it's like that, doing that with your emotional, you know, with your emotional state. And the more we push these things down in our body and use food as the way to get them to release them, the more we're apt to for that to come out in an emotionally based binge.
That makes a lot of sense, and you're speaking a lot to this idea of like emotion avoidance and the different behaviors that we use to try and avoid those emotions, because for a plethora of reasons, we have, you know, typically rooted in trauma. Like that's how we've learned to deal with emotions that feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. So it's, you know what, it's not even just avoidance. Sometimes it's like, just overwhelm of an emotion, which also can be, we can also avoid that too. But I had somebody ask me and I really resonated with the question where they said, well, sometimes I binge when I'm like really happy, like I'll come home from a great, like a fulfilling event or something like that, or a time with friends, and I'll binge. And I see that sometimes as like, emotions just overwhelm us, or they put us, they take us outside of our window of tolerance, whether for a reason that feels positive or negative, but it sort of just is an energy that takes us out of feeling like in that homeostasis, you know, in some sort of balanced state. And that energy needs to go somewhere. And I think sometimes we haven't learned how to process it. And so we process it through the sensory experience of food. I'm an occupational therapist, as well. And so, yeah. And one of the things that, you know, we work a lot with kids and with sensory integration and sensory therapy. And I remember like when I would sit in my, now at the time I was still binging, but I would sit in my classes for OT school, and like be learning about the ways that all of this, like how sensory experiences are very grounding, and they get us back to our window of tolerance. And for kids, especially, this was used for kids, especially on like on the autism spectrum, or, and these are the techniques that we use. And I remember thinking, that is exactly what I need. Like, why is this only for kids? There's so much of the nervous system, I think, that is just not acknowledged as dysregulated in adults. I think that there's like interest in it for kids, but I see so much that there's a lot of nervous system dysregulation in adults. And I certainly experienced that myself. And I think emotions can be extremely overwhelming in that sense, and can send us into a place of like hyper or hypo arousal, where we need to get back. We need to get back to like, we need to either like add or take away from that energy. And food is such a sensory experience that can do that for us. It's you know, the textures, the sounds, the smells, the visual appeal. I mean, it's all, and it's right there, right? Like you're when you're feeling these emotions, you're in your house, it's like right there in the kitchen. It's so easy. So I think there's a lot of compassion to be had around, you know, why we're using food in this way. It's actually quite resourceful. And we don't, I don't think we give ourselves credit for being so human to be finding what we need to calm down, or, you know, calm up, or whatever it is, wherever, whatever state we're coming from. But food sort of like fits that bill. And that's why it's so, it's such an easy, so easily becomes our like medication of choice.
It, I was thinking as you were speaking, this idea of like, our behaviors around food so often are attempts at regulation and self-regulation. That's exactly what you just described so beautifully, is this idea of it, in the long term, like it creates more suffering, and there's really harmful consequences of like disordered eating behaviors. It leads to more suffering, but in the short term, like it works. And I feel like that's something that a lot of people, that there's a misunderstanding there. Like there's a function, there's a payoff of these behaviors, even if they're not maybe the best behavior that we could choose in the time, they're resourceful.
Yes. I always say it's like our misguided, like little ally friend. I think that like the concept of this is so important, because it takes the onus off of us as being somehow responsible for our self-punishment. We call it self-sabotage. And I hear that all the time. Like, why do I do this to myself? I know that I don't want to be doing this, but I do it over and over again. What's wrong with me? I'm broken. And it isn't that. It's what you described. It's like, it's your body clinging for something right then and there, because it's acting so primally, and it just wants you to calm down. And while it is not the most, you know, in the long term, it's not helping us, but it's helping us in that moment. And if we can have some like insight into that whole phenomenon and what we're doing and why we're doing it, I think it's such a, it opens the door to some self-compassion, which is usually quite lacking in for people who struggle with binge eating. Where at least you can say, oh, like this makes a little more sense to me then. I sort of understand why maybe this is happening, and maybe that awareness and that compassion can help bring you to the next level of being able to address it. Cause I think we just sit in that confusion and disgust for ourselves, because we just don't even know, we can't even understand why this is happening.
I would, that there's so many like rich, amazing little nuggets in everything you just shared. I would love for you to share a little bit of kind of the nuances and the differences between like these terms of emotional eating, overeating, binge eating. Like, can you help unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. So binge eating is more likely rooted in restriction, and usually physical and mental restriction is a part of that, because there is a very primal response that's happening. So when your body perceives that there is a lack of access to food, whether perceived, like in the case of mental restriction, or actual in the case of physical restriction, it will, from an evolutionary standpoint, like prepare itself to stock up on food. And it wants, not only does it want the amount of food it needs, but it needs an insurance policy in case there's any future restriction. So there's an, like, this is something that comes from like your primal brain that will point you to food. And that is that experience I was talking about in the beginning of like that frenzied, urgent, like where you're not, it's like, actually you're not acting from your like higher brain. You're acting from your primal brain.
Right.
And that's why it feels like this thing you can't even control, because it's an instinct. That is a binge eating experience. And then an emotional eating experience are those times. And first of all, it's not also not terrible to emotionally eat. And sometimes emotional eating is like wonderful. But it's just so demonized that I think it turns into more than it started to, you know, that it might've started as. But emotional eating is using food as an emotional replacement or suppression or numbing or distraction or expression, including anger, right? So like, I find that there's clients of mine and myself, I have to say, would use food as a way to express anger towards someone or something. This rebellious sort of attitude of doing what you're not supposed to do, which is, you know, society tells us not to be eating and definitely not to be emotionally eating. And so we do it because it's like, well, because sometimes we just don't know where else to put that rebellious expression. But when we're using food when we talk about emotional eating in a non-productive way, it's more like that chronic use of replacing food for emotions, which doesn't have to manifest in a binge exactly. It could just be like low level grazing throughout the day that's not rooted in hunger, or it could be a binge too. It could end up in a large scale binge, and sometimes I call it a meta binge, because you start eating because of emotional suppression. You start judging the fact that you've eaten because of that, and then you keep going because now you have to push down the guilt and like replace your emotion of guilt and shame with more food. So it's this vicious cycle. And then overeating being, it can be a subset of emotional eating where we're just eating past fullness in a way that doesn't necessarily feel frenzied or drastic or uncomfortable or even out of control. It's just something that we find ourselves doing in a mindless way where we're just consistently eating past fullness. And I actually find that sometimes in binge eating recovery, people end up in an overeating state a lot because they've sort of eliminated the mental and physical restriction, but not necessarily the emotional restriction. And so that sort of remains, and they're not having those frenzied primal binges, but they're still eating past fullness because there's some other things that just haven't yet gotten worked out. I almost see it like on a spectrum where like you got to address the primal stuff first, and then you can work your way through to, okay, well, what's happening that we're needing to eat beyond fullness, which tends to be more related to emotional eating. Not always, but it tends to be.
That's a really helpful just kind of set of working definitions and distinctions between those. I'm curious, I know where I'm going off grid, going off script here, but I'm curious, I'm so grateful that you are so willing to share about your personal journey and your experience. And I would just love to know, like, what were some of the most helpful things for you as you started recovering from binge eating?
Yeah. So, well, at the time, this was several years ago now, but at the time, and it wasn't like I hadn't tried to recover before. And I had been to actually some inpatient outpatient clinics in my lifetime. I had been through therapy since I was a teenager, because that's when I developed my eating disorder. And I really tried everything. And I think that while I did get a lot out of therapy in itself, because I actually kind of like love therapy, I just love talking things through and having someone to like hold space for me. But it didn't actually help my eating. So while I found a lot of benefit for it in other ways and learned a lot about myself, it wasn't manifesting in any sort of way for recovery. The difference was, I actually picked up the book, the Fuck It Diet by Caroline Dweck. And I don't even know how I came across at the time when I found it. It wasn't even a book yet. It was like her ebook on her, you know, website. And I read it and was like, Oh my God, I just, you know, when you just read something and you're like, this, every word of this is everything I ever wanted to read. Like, this is what I've been needing this whole time and didn't even know it. She gives you permission. If you're not familiar with the book, I mean, it's just the idea that binge eating is not a problem of willpower, and that it's about restricting your food, and that the way out is not to learn how to eat less, but to allow yourself to eat more without guilt. And when I read it, I was like, and you know, you just know, like, that's what I need to do. It's exactly what I need to do. It's always what I've needed to do. And I've been told the opposite most of this time. I mean, there's been so much, I think, with traditional forms of binge eating treatment, it's rooted a lot in the emotional component, which I think happens last. I could not access my higher brain in moments when my primal brain was screaming. So all of that work and all of that, like, use these tools for, you know, to manage my emotions during a binge, we're like, yeah, that makes sense. When I'm not binging, it makes perfect sense. But when I'm binging, I don't care. I'm not using that. And it also had been rooted in the food addiction model, the treatment for binge eating. So it was assuming that I was just addicted to food, and then I needed to learn how to stop by taking away my binge foods, or, you know, my fear foods, and like avoiding them further, which was like the worst thing for me to do.
Right.
So this was the first book, or, you know, anything that I had read that validated that, like, no, that's not what you're dealing with. That's not the way through this. You actually need to make peace with food in a way that involves eating more of it, even though you're a binge eater. For me to hear that was something opened up, and I started, like, I embarked on this, like, journey based on her book. I still to this day, like, I love Caroline Deere for that. So that book was one thing that really held my hand through the process, and was probably one of the most important things. As well as having some support, I have three kids, and I'm married, and my husband was like fully on board with all of this and was just like so supportive and kind of like a rock through it. And I don't underestimate that. There is something about having someone in my corner the whole time that felt like I felt safe to do it. But also I feel like at the same time as I started this, I started to think about all of the ways that I had been, sort of just like quiet oppressed seems like such a strong word, but I started looking at the ways I was raised and thinking about all of the beliefs that I had, like, just absorbed about what it meant to be female and what it meant to be, a good girl and all of these things. And the more I started to like, this happened together. It was like, all of a sudden I was like, wait, I'm buying into this narrative. Wait, but this and this and this. And I started to really like lean into that. And that just kind of fueled me and empowered me. And so that all of those things just sort of built on themselves. I read The Beauty Myth by Naomi, a lot of books here.
Are
helpful. By Naomi Wolf. And social media really helped me feel less alone. The more that I started realizing there was an anti-diet space, on Instagram, I was like, okay, well, these are going to be my friends for a while, because no one else knows about this stuff. And I need to lean on this, you know, these people that seem to know about, like, just have this totally different perspective than I had ever encountered. So I would say those things like really helped get me through and pulled me through until I felt like I could like kind of stand up on my own with it.
I love that you draw attention to, I mean, so many important things, the power of support. Like, there's neuroscience backing behind that. Like, when we feel safe and supported, like, there's so much that can be accessed. And I love that you point out the paradox. I think it's so important, of this paradox of this old school, like, food addiction model that's not helpful, and how, like, the paradox of, like, healing from binge eating is like permission and not more restriction, which is so much what the old model was based in. And I just think that is, you know, I'm so glad that you found the resources that you found, and the books that you mentioned are also two that have been really, profound for my own healing journey as well. And much love to those authors. I mean, I think, like, the anti-diet movement and is so, it's healing, and it's healing so many people. Would you share just kind of briefly for listeners, like that might be a new term that they've never heard, like anti-diet, what does that mean?
Right. So this is strongly related to the term diet culture, which if you haven't heard of the term, it's like water, the water we're swimming in, right? So it's this idea that I think we inherit this from a very young age, that we are supposed to be striving to be losing weight or maintaining weight, or being the goal is to have your appearances and thinness is the goal. It's your goal for health. It's your goal. It's your moral obligation. And that's like your duty is to be doing that. And we accept this like without question. I mean, we're always, it's the reason that we have conversations with people, and it's extremely like, just talking about the weather. We talk about the diets we're on, the way our body looks. We feel compelled to apologize if we've gained weight, or at least remark that we're doing something about it. And if we're not, that, you know, we have to be self-deprecating. It's very normalized to be doing that, to look at anyone who's not in a conventionally, a straight size body, and to assume things about people that they're lazy, or that they're unattractive, or they're not strong, or whatever it is. This is the running, like this is the undercurrent of our belief system. Mm-hmm. It's so strongly rooted in weight loss and appearance, and, you know, and thinness as morally, a moral obligation. Mm-hmm. An anti-diet culture is, well, they're a little bit different, but anti-diet culture is the rejection of that idea, which is extremely radical, and like honestly took me years to wrap my head around, it took me a significant amount of time, because it really just goes against everything we know to be true, as far as what health means and what, you know, what our bodies are supposed to be. An anti-diet being the idea that we are not dieting anymore, and that we are not pursuing intentional weight loss or manipulating our food, or believing that is the path that we need to be on. And anytime we're not doing that, we're somehow off of the path, like off the wagon, this whole idea. It's permission to not do that anymore, which can be really, really difficult to number one, accept in your own heart and mind, but also to deal with when you decide to pursue something like that. And then you are dealing with the rest of the world who is actively resisting that idea and frowning upon that. The anti-diet culture space itself. And that's why the support is so helpful, because there are so many people who are in it now and believing it and, you know, doing this together, but it can feel really isolating out in the world where it's not something that's at all socially acceptable or even heard of.
Freaks. Total freaks. To the world. Yeah. I'm happy to be a freak.
I'm so happy to be a freak.
Many others.
I know. And honestly, the community I have found, like here, I mean, it's so interesting too, right? Because like we don't even know each other in person, but there's just been so much, because it's such a, there's just to link arms with people who are like, no, thank you. Like, no, that's not, it's really about authenticity and being able to, find like-minded people who are willing to just say like, no, I'm not playing that game anymore. I'm not going to conform anymore. I'm not going to be everything you tell me I need to be. I'm going to just be me. And that's going to be good enough. Thank you very much. And finding other people who are on board with that idea is, they're usually really great people. So.
Yeah. And God forbid we talk about health as being more nuanced than diet and exercise. I mean, the minute you say that, people are like, whoa.
I get really, really, really mad.
What are you talking about? Yes. Yes. Well, if you are, you know, just if you're listening and you are, this is resonating with you, then, you know, I think I speak for Stephanie in saying too, like, there are people, there is community. The anti-diet community is awesome. And you can find us on Instagram, right?
Yeah. Start there. Yeah. For the time being.
It's a good place. It really is like a very accessible like place to start. Well, kind of speaking.
I think so. Yeah, for sure.
And books, right? Maybe books.
Yes. Books,
which
podcasts?
Books? Yes.
Podcasts. Yeah.
Yes. Do you have a favorite book on kind of this idea, or maybe a second favorite in second place of, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can give you a few. I really like Anti-Diet by Christy Harrison is another one that I really like, and Health at Every Size and Just Eat It, which is similar to the Fuck It Diet.
Yeah.
Body Respect. Oh my gosh. I have like a whole bookshelf downstairs and I'm trying to call up which ones, and there's always like new ones coming out too, which I'm always like getting on board. I haven't read the one by Joshua Walrich.
Food. I'm in a butchering something about food isn't medicine.
Food isn't medicine, which that's one that speaks to a different lens of this, which I haven't really talked about, which is like the wellness culture, like the idea that we owe, that if it's not thinness that we owe, then it's health and sort of the health culture out there. And that, you know, food is not the cure-all. Because I certainly drank that Kool-Aid for a long time. That gluten-free, GMO-free Kool-Aid. You know, where like food was going to cure all of my issues. And the clean eating. So yeah, his book talks a lot about and dismantles some of those myths. So I hear. I haven't read it yet. But yeah, so many books. What are your favorite books?
I mean, you listed a lot of them. Did you say Body Respect? Yeah. I think you said it.
Body's not an apology too.
Oh, that's a good one. Body Kindness. I love. I recommend that one a lot to my teenagers too, because it's really it's a really beautiful book. Like the way that it's
even the outside. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really pretty. I mean, it's great for adults too, but I think it's a really like it's a good primer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely primer books out there that and then you can dive a little deeper. But yeah, there's support in all of these ways of kind of like venturing into this world and learning more about it and finding, like you say, support or even community there, you know?
Yeah. Kind of on that note, I would love to, well, this has been like such a great conversation. Thank you so much for being here and just being willing to share your wisdom and parts of your own story. I really appreciate your authenticity and vulnerability to just show up and be real. Where can people find you or follow you and continue to learn from you?
On Instagram. It's my primary home. I am Stephanie Michelle, Stephanie with an F and Michelle with one L. My parents weren't planning on me becoming an Instagram name because it's so hard to spell. and I have a website, iamstephaniemichelle.com, and I am actually in course development right now for an intuitive eating course that is focused specifically on binge eating. So it has more of a binge eating spin. So for people who are interested in both of these concepts, that's going to be out this fall.
That is so exciting and makes me very happy. That's so needed. It's so needed.
Yeah. I hope that's the plan. It's what I needed at one time. So.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. And we hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that you learned something new. Just a reminder that this podcast is about mental health and mental health concepts. Education about psychology and therapy is not a substitute for individual therapy. If you want to help this podcast grow, which would be awesome, and get it into the hands of other listeners, please subscribe, rate, or leave me a review. It really does make a difference.